crisis is the x-ray. Like, you get to see where people are and what they're committed to and what they're not committed to and what their, you know, what their motives are. Because we're just revealed, which, you know, some people, to your point, they become heroic. Some people, they become really narcissistic. Some people start looking out, you know.
One, two.
Welcome to the Emotional Intelligence Podcast, a podcast where we explore the intersection of emotional intelligence and leadership. And whether you're a seasoned executive or just starting out in your leadership journey, we're going to share practical tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you develop your emotional intelligence and achieve your goals. So sit back, relax, and get ready to take your leadership skills to the next level. I'm Ismail.
And I'm Samir.
Hey, greetings, everyone. We've got Adrian Kaler, a fellow podcaster as well as a leadership engagement expert. He's the founder and senior partner of the executive coaching firm Take New Ground, as well as part of the podcast Naked Leadership, host, co-host, probably all of the above. But we want to thank you very much for carving out some time to speak with us. And I always love starting out with the guests sharing a bit about themselves, you know, work-wise, personal-wise.
Sure thing. It's so great to be here with you guys. I love all the banter before we get started. You know, this is going to be a fun conversation. So I'm Adrian Kaler. I'm a crazy man. I really prefer being crazy. I like crazy people. I like fanatics. I like people that are on the edge. I like people who have like made the valiant choice to like that life matters. And if you make that choice that life matters, it just shifts the way you look at things. It shifts what actions you take. It shifts how you spend your time. It shifts what you believe about everything, that life matters. So, and I don't mean life like, oh, altruistically, like life. No. Like this moment, this conversation matters to me. It's not like I'm just here because somebody signed me up for this. I'm here because I want to be here. And I'm looking forward to explore this conversation with you guys. And I know behind you are organizations, behind you are people, behind you are relationships, all the stuff that really matters, just waiting right here. And, you know, I'm kind of tenderized in this moment because I've got two guys on my team are both going through some grief, deep grief, and I've been crying a lot this morning. And that's a beautiful thing. And I always welcome it. Like, so, you know, get to stand with amazing people doing amazing things. And when you do that, you invite trouble into your life. And so I get to be in the trenches with these great people that are troubled, that are frustrated, that are excited, that are, you know, they're just that. I can't even describe the word I'm looking for. They're on the hook. Mm-hmm. You know, they're on the hook for something big, and they've proclaimed that it's going to happen. They declared that it's going to happen, and they're filled with both excitement about the future and tons of trepidation. They're engaging all the conscious necessary conversations, and then there are a ton that they're not talking about. And I warn all my clients that it's the conversations under the table that are running the organization. And what they don't talk about, what they won't talk about, what they're in, you know, what they are in, what they're tolerating. And usually that's connected to some kind of resistance for them, either based on their own insecurities or based on their own incompetence or based on, you know, there's something there. And so my vocation, but my passion is to help, you know, amazing people thrive. And I've been doing this for a long time. Been doing this for 13 years this way. I've always been involved with people. Before this, I ran a foundation, and we gave a bunch of money, but also ran programs in prison with murderers. So I ran my first coaching clients were murderers in prison. So that's
wow. Fun.
Before that, I was a pastor for several years. So that makes me really weird. And I was essentially a mobilizer of people. So I'd take people around the world to go have, you know, breathtaking experiences and also make a difference for someone else and, you know, have stories and experiences that change their own life and change their legacy with their kids and obviously change the life of the people that were there too. But you know, people are always out for their own experience, which is great. And before that, I was an intensive care nurse in pediatric in Chicago and at Children's Memorial. So anyway, being with people at a crossroads in their life has always been, I don't know, the most fun. And I've become, you know, world class at helping people navigate those waters. So that's what I do.
So I got to ask the question. That's amazing to hear. And Adrian, thank you for sharing all of that. What drives you? You've made some really big leaps from, you know, entire career changes. You've done things that, you know, to the average person would be, you know, scary to jump into. But like, what drives you to make those shifts? And what's been kind of your calling card in those moments when you question things?
Wow. That's a significant question. What drives me? It's great. It's really great. I just want to like honor the question. What drives me? I mean, the first thing that comes to mind when you were even in the middle of you asking it was life itself drives me. Meaning, I mean, I was a pastor, right? So I've got a spiritual view of the world and I have a master's in theology and all that weird, boring stuff. But I, you know, so I do have a worldview that the world is out to help us in the sense there is a benevolent, you want to call it God, you want to call it whatever you want. There's a force in the world and redemption. I said this yesterday on the call with an old client that called me back because he was in the middle of a crossroads. And I said he should write a book. He's a music guy, was successful in the music world, black, gay, overcame a lot of stuff and was abused a lot and mistreated a lot. And I said, you should write a book, man. Why? Because redemption is the best song that's ever been played. Like people overcoming hard times, people's chaos being ordered, people's brokenness being healed. That is the story that is the most captivating. We know that from all the study of story. So I'm like, you should write a book. So anyway, I believe that. I believe that the world's not out to get us. The world's here for us. And really, I believe there is a benevolent spirit, whether it's just metaphysics or whether it's a real God, quote unquote, or whatever anybody believes. I'm cool with that. But I do believe that. And so with that, life wants to happen. Life wants to happen. So I get up every morning looking for life. And that shows up like vitality, like energy. It shows up like creativity, possibility, shows up like willingness to go suffer really well and be, you know, I was saying a minute ago, like just being with the shit of life, like, and just being there, not trying to run out of the valley. There are gifts in the valley that if we're not willing to embrace the valley, metaphorically speaking, the hard times in life, the failures either of myself or just of, you know, I've got a business partner whose dad is dying and he's probably got 48 hours left. And these are crucial, crucial days and choices he gets to make of how he relates. This is emotional for me.
Hey, I totally understand.
Just like how he relates to his mom and how he relates to his dad and to his kids and his sisters and all these things. Like, how he shows up right now is going to mark the rest of his life. So slow down, man. Be here. Go ahead. Like have the courageous conversations. Like make this count. And I want that in my life. I want to do that. I want to make it count. Period. So anyway, that's what I stand for. That's what I'm committed to.
No, that's such a great answer. And, you know, we appreciate you being open with us about
sure.
Your things that are going on. And
might as well, man.
Yeah. For context, Samir and I are both very spiritual people.
Wonderful.
We do believe in, you know, a single God, you know, that, and again, also for anyone out there, you know, whatever you believe, totally cool. But
yeah,
it's something Samir and I, thankfully we have a common thread with that. And we leverage that when we help each other during difficult times. Thankfully, it seems like when Samir is really down, I'm up, and vice versa. And he's one of my closest confidants. And I do believe I mean, difficult times, they bring out the best in people. They also bring out the worst in people in the sense of like how low you can go. And you can let me know your thoughts on this, but some of the greatest accomplishments and change I've made as an individual has always been during or after something very challenging for me.
Right on.
It does define me. Yeah. And I'm assuming it defines a lot of people, but, I don't think they should also dwell on those challenging times because they are going to come and go.
Yeah, it's interesting. The word crisis, because that's kind of what you're talking about, like whenever we're thrown into crisis, the etymology, and I'm a total nerd, so I study where language comes from. The word crisis means seat of judgment. And in that way, I think it's just the natural, like crisis is the x-ray. Like you get to see where people are and what they're committed to and what they're not committed to and what their, you know, what their motives are, because we're just revealed, which, you know, some people, to your point, they become heroic. Some people, they become really narcissistic. Some people start looking out, you know, we're talking, I think before we started recording around, you know, that senior leaders, I think, Ismail, I think you were saying, like, it's in your experience, senior leaders are really self-focused, and I think that's true. I think we're all self-focused in some way, and you need to be because you got to lead yourself and all that. I can make an argument for that, but I think your main point was that there wasn't a worldview in which leadership is getting results through and with others, because that's what I think leadership is. I'm thinking of this book. I think it's called The Outward Mindset by the Arbinger Institute. It points out that, and we know this, I know this other ways before I read this book, but, you know, when they train Navy SEALs, and I've coached some Navy SEALs, fascinating guys, obviously heroes, and grateful for all those guys. But they invest around $10 million in each person in training over time. And what are they training them for? Well, the key aspect of their character they're either revealing in them or training into them, if they were to make it, is that when shit hits the fan, do they look to themselves, self-preservation, or do they look to the team? And if you don't look to the team in crisis, then you're not worthy of being a Navy SEAL, because we're the elite, you know, and we must take care of the team. And so anyway, the elite in the world do that. Like in crisis, where are my guys? How do I help? Well, how do I be, you know, and how do I, even if I'm the platoon commander in a moment of crisis, I might not be the commander. I might need to be a follower and let somebody else lead. Anyway, so the elite leadership, and Navy SEALs are obviously a part of that. As people think about the SEALs, they're, you know, top notch. I know, Ismail, you had a long history in the Navy SEALs. You were saying that before we started.
That's right. Doesn't my physique really just show that? You know? If there's anything that's Navy SEAL about me, though, it's the notion of team. And yes. As you were describing that, it actually really it solidified something in my mind, where just because you lead a team or just because you're a manager doesn't mean that you can't get in the weeds and mm-hmm. lift someone up or put them in the spotlight for a moment, because mm-hmm. they are the best at what they do. And it does not by any means demean you or make you less important or useful. And no. one of my favorite things, I've said this a lot, and just also to myself, is the most joy I get is seeing someone else succeed. Yeah. Because if they're succeeding, it means everyone around them is succeeding. There's just no question about it.
Yep.
And there was one comment, actually, Samir, I don't know if you remember this, and you have to correct me if I'm wrong, but again, it comes from the Navy SEALs, mission first, people always.
Mm.
The notion that you can't do one without the other.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think about that a lot after you had mentioned that, Samir, and if only... And this was also part of what I was talking about earlier. If only everyone thought that way all the time. And that's what I kind of meant, like the altruistic perspective that that I might be thinking about. It might be just, hey, that's not going to happen, but I really want it to.
Mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
I'm curious just about the, sorry, if you had a point, feel free, but I was going to ask you first, how does the you as a pastor and that foundation, does that still run through the work that you do now, as an executive coach?
I'm sure it's everywhere. I'm sure it's everywhere. In the way that, you know, I coach business leaders, but I don't coach them. I don't fix their businesses, you know? So, and by that, I mean, I don't come in with, okay, here's the template for setting 2024 goals or whatever. Here's best practice on blah, blah, blah. Why? Because all that's out there. And if they wanted it, they'd already have it. Right? There's like a book about everything. There's a YouTube video about everything. There's an article about everything. Everything's already out there. So the fact that they don't have that already tells me something else is going on. Right? So I want to get to that, which is really around, it ends up being very personal. It ends up being around their own vision, which is very personal. It ends up being around their own despair, which is very personal. And like, what's the resignation about, or even like how they're showing up with their team. Either if they're angry or frustrated or whatever the negative, quote unquote, negative emotion is. Like, if we don't do that, then you could plant great seeds in really shitty soil and they're not going to grow. You know, they'll look good for a little bit and you'll give yourself credit for all these great seeds you planted. Here's the new thing. But no, who you are is the soil in your life. And where you're coming from and what your worldview is and what you believe and what you're committed to and you know, the integration of your history. I was going to say where you've been, not really. It's really how I'm relating to where I've been. That's everything. And, you know, that's the soil in life. So it's a very personal conversation. And that's pastoral in that way.
When you work with with leaders or founders, are you finding that they are typically self-aware of these resignations or different issues that they're battling with internally that are then showing up in the way they lead, or are they just sometimes completely blind to it? And you're like opening up, you know, a huge can of worms for them. They're like, holy crap, I never thought about that. Like, I'm just curious what your experiences are like with these leaders, because they're extremely, you know, typically very successful people, but they could still be held back by something. And I want to know if it's something they're aware of but need help working through, or stuff they're just not even aware of altogether.
Yeah. First off, you guys are really smart. You guys ask great questions. I appreciate that. So are they aware? I have a joke where it's like when a leader has an epiphany, they're the last one to the party. And that's my experience. It's like once a leader discovers something, everybody else knew it for so long. And finally, then they'll like say, oh, that's a good idea, Tom. But they've known it. You know, they've been talking about it for a long time. So usually that's true. What are they aware of? They're aware of the symptoms. Like they're, and part of the emotions are a symptom. Like experience is a symptom. And it's like kind of like lights going off on the dashboard. Like it's an indicator of something. So they're usually aware of that. And most of the time they've gotten some feedback about it. They're really defensive about it mostly because most of them are really driven people and type A, which I love all those guys. Like I joke, like I coach type A dickheads. They're my favorite. Partially because I can relate to them. I can be that guy. I can be a steamroller. I can be, you know, nobody ever asked me to be serious. I was just this way. You know, I just was always an old soul, always wanted to get to the heart of the matter, always wanted to have the quote unquote deep conversation. So anyway, I get it. And but there is unknown terrain, which is usually most founders are very externally focused people. They're action oriented, right? They're kind of future oriented. They're always like, these results, they're driven. If they're successful, they're really driven towards making something happen. Usually the idea of taking a look and being introspective, they're turned off by that, partially because they'll say it doesn't matter. They'll say they don't have time for that. But really, it's just a terrain they don't know. And what we've offered people historically is some kind of religious context potentially, but they've also offered people a therapeutic context. And most therapists, I'll try not to go off on therapists, God bless them all, but they're Freudian. They're Freudian based, right? Freud was wonderful at his job, and he convinced us all that we're causal agents, he called it an etiological view, that I am what happened. So if I'm frustrated today, when did that start? And you start back when you're 3 and 4 years old and mom and dad and blah, 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 all that, which is fine. Part of that's true, but it's how I mentioned this a second ago. It's how I'm relating to my history that actually generates the experience, not what happened. Because, you know, I used to coach murderers. They'll have a big story about them being black and from the inner city of LA and in the gang. And I'll listen to all that. And I'll say, well, there's other black guys that didn't have dads and grew up in Inglewood. They didn't kill someone. So your math's off. You're drawing a direct line of these are the causal factors that made you make the decision. No, you made the decision. You use those causal factors to justify why you're not responsible. And so anyway, point is, there's not been a space in which I think for a lot of these people that they can think about the internal world or what's making their decisions for them that's both honest and fast. It's really honest and it's efficient. Like, let's get to it. Like, as quick as we can, let's get to the truth. And not talk about there's nothing wrong with talking about feelings. I love feelings. I'm very emotional, as you've seen on this call already. I'm very sensitive, hyper empathetic, and hyper intuitive with other people. But we tend to tiptoe our way towards the truth. And at least if I'm working with someone, we're going to get to the truth as quickly as we can. And the only thing that slows it down is pride. Yeah. It's not pride. Mystery. You nailed it. It's not confusion. It's never, you know, people always say it's really complex. It's not. I mean, it's complicated because we're involved. So because I'm going to do everything I can to like preserve my own image of myself. And I want to make sure you guys like me and that I like me and blah, blah, blah. Like I'm doing that whole game instead of like, let's just buddy up to the truth. We call it hugging the cactus in my work, where it's like, you know, there's some truth out there that doesn't sound so good and doesn't look so good. It's the cactus. If you embrace it, it's going to hurt, but it's necessary. So as quickly as someone's willing to, you know, befriend their shadow, as Jung would say, something like that, then you can actually get into something that's productive. So we'll talk about history. We'll talk about what's going on internally, not so we cry about something or have some kind of goodwill hunting moment, but actually so that I can integrate my history and become more human. Because otherwise we just have this segregated life and like we're doing actions today, trying to act like history didn't affect me. No, it did. Now, how do you shape that experience so that it fuels you into the future? And if you talk about this, you know, empathetic, high EQ leadership, that's what will work in the future, is people that can be themselves, be real, and be transparent in such a way that it actually draws people closer to them, you know? So
I love that you brought up authenticity, right? It's a common theme that we bring up a lot on this podcast. Can a leader truly be authentic until they've done the work to explore those issues, until they've quote unquote hugged the cactus? Can they truly be authentic with their teams?
Can they be authentic before they've done the work? Well, that's an interesting question. Can they be authentic before they've done the work?
Like, until they've figured out who they are, can they truly show up as their authentic self?
Well, I have counterintuitive views on lots of things. Here's a counterintuitive view that if they are being withheld, let's say, then that's, in some ways, that's being authentic, because it just shows actually where they are in this moment. Like, I was just talking to a client today. He's got a boss that he doesn't like. And he's got a high profile job inside of a big company. And he's got this boss that's really image based and doesn't, he said to me on the call, he said, my boss doesn't care about me at all. And I thought, wow, that's, first off, that's really sad. Second, I don't think you should stay there very long unless you can shift that. But also, you know, that's his boss being authentic. Now, he's not being, what would the distinction be? He's not being transparent about, well, obviously he doesn't have a problem with the fact that a guy that works for him that actually has control over or influence over his success, he doesn't care that that guy that works for him, my client, feels like he doesn't care about him. There's too many he's in that sentence, but you know what I'm saying? He doesn't care about that. And that's, but he's decided not to care about that based on results. He doesn't even care that he doesn't care. And he doesn't understand that the lack of connection there actually is hindering progress. It is hindering results. But he doesn't want to know about that. Why? Because it's all the, what have we called it? We've called it soft skills, right? So, and that's, one of the bones I have to pick with the business world is they've called all this relational stuff soft skills, which is obviously very, comes from a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's contemptuous. Like, okay, those are soft skills. I'm
condescending,
gonna
right?
Condescending. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. You know, it's condescending. It's like, I'm going to go deal with spreadsheets and, you know, P&Ls and, you know, all that stuff and, you know, money. And I will leave the soft skills to, like, I don't know, HR or something. But that's, you know, we always say, like, all results come out of the context of a relationship. All of them. That's what I say. It's like gravity is that how you relate to people, how you relate to yourself, that's a relationship as well. But how I'm relating to other people and how I'm relating to business and how I'm relating to this organization and the market and the future, that generates everything. Because all that belief system will then generate all my thoughts and feelings, and all my thoughts and feelings will generate the decisions I make or don't make. And all that will generate actions I take and don't take. And all that will generate results or the lack thereof. So it's all essential, but, you know, anyway, back to are they being authentic? They're being authentic. Sometimes people ought to not be authentic. They ought to get, they ought to do the work, right? That's right. That's right. And wonder about new things that might open up more possibilities for them. Although it will always be very scary. And that's usually what people are running from, right? It's like, if I were to be in an authentic conversation with you, it requires some vulnerability, and vulnerability, you know, is full of fear. I mean, what are you guys going to think about me if I'm honest? You know, are you going to follow me? You're going to like me? You're going to respect me? It is a roll of the dice.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We hope you're enjoying the episode so far. If you want to stay updated on all the latest content and behind the scenes action, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and several other places by using the link in the show notes. And if it's not too much trouble, we'd love for you to leave a review and share this episode with some of your friends. Your support means everything to us, and we can't wait to connect with you online. Now, let's get back to the show. I'm curious about there's a point that you had talked about these ultra achievers, these high achievers, entrepreneurs, yep, who are,
I call them type A dickheads, but go ahead.
That too. Yes. Great way that to too. I was curious. I mean, we talk about their success. Now, obviously, first of all, success is a very, very broad term, and everyone has their own definition of success, but we'll just talk about, like, their prototypical success that you see: money, seniority, that type of stuff, right? Do you feel like you have to be that type of person? And we're talking about type A. We're talking about not necessarily caring about what other people think in order to succeed. Do you think that they have to be like that?
No. Of course. I mean, if you're like that, then I think you have a higher aptitude for success. Is that the right word? You have a higher probability of success in business anyway. Now, it depends on how we define success. But people, I mean, leaders love hiring meat eating, you know, take no prisoners type folks because they're an effective tool. But, and because historically over the, I don't know, the last 30 years, we've decided that, you know, relationships come below results. So, you know, the end justifies the means, that type of thing. And there are businesses out there like that. And, you know, so they, I think they tend to be more successful. They just tend to be really lonely. And they tend to have lots of, this happens a ton, people I'm talking to, they've got success and their partners don't like them anymore. They're on the verge of divorce. Their kids don't know their name. They, you know, it's that whole, I've got a question on my little intro form people fill out before I start working with them. They say, like, if you were, it's, imagine you're 95 years old. Imagine you keep living the way you've living, you're living right now. What regrets will you have? You're on your deathbed. And you keep living the way you're living, what regrets will you have? And that's a long list. Because we know from the research now, they did, you know, studied all these hospice cases, right? It's always relationships that people regret. It's not the thing, because who cares about the stupid watch and the car and the and that, you know, specific, you know, vacation and blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares when they're dying. Nobody cares. It's the quality of the relationships. So you don't have to be that way. The best leaders can do both, right? So our biggest challenge, I think, for the human mind is to live in a both-and world versus an either-or world, right? So we naturally, it's either this, either I'm driven or I'm kind. Like, people live like that. Like, I can't do both. And we stand saying, oh, no, no. It does take more guts. It takes more nuance. It takes more art than science. But to go after both is actually the only way to play to win. Otherwise, you're just playing not to lose.
Ooh, that's a good one. I mean, part of the reason I'm asking that question is because I dabble in both, and I'm always curious, like, who do I have to be? I obviously, a lot of the work that I'm doing right now is defining my definition of success. Mm-hmm. That's one really thing, important thing to me, because I have a family. I got two kids that, you know, I want them to have values that I either wish I had or that I want them to have. Yep. And everything revolves around, ultimately, at this age, very young age, what am I doing? What is mom doing? What is dad doing around them? And to me, that is a huge important part. And I don't want them to see me as this type A dickhead. Right. Mm-hmm. But I also want them to see me as someone who puts their best foot forward and tries, that, like, puts the effort in and does the work. And so I I'm glad to hear. I mean, I had a good idea that the answer was going to be, but it's great to get a second
just
opinion,
my thoughts.
You know? Get your perspective.
Yeah.
Well, okay, one thought that I, or question I should say I have is for you, as you get into relationships with your coaching clients. You know, I have some friends that, you know, they've gone through some stuff in their personal life, and, you know, I'm a believer in therapy. I told them, you know, you should go talk to someone. They've tried it out. And the feedback I often get is, man, like, I just wish they would just tell me what the hell I should do. You know, like, I don't have time to go spend 2 hours a week for the next 15 weeks trying to figure out what I should do. Just freaking tell me what to do. Right. Mm-hmm. And so efficiency is huge in the business world. Your clients are looking for quick results. They don't want to be with you for the next 12 months. They want to be with you for a month and figure out what the hell's going on. So what do you do? Like, because this is good advice for our listeners. Like, how do you immediately knock down those roadblocks and just get into the meat of it and be efficient in helping these people kind of realize their issues or their full potential?
Yeah. Once again, great question. I've got comments for you too, Ismail. We could talk about that maybe offline. I mean, how do I do it? First off, my chief commitment to any of my clients, and I warn them about this early just so they can opt out if they want to before we sign any contracts, my commitment is to be a fierce advocate for them. Full stop. So I'm an advocate for them. Like, I want them to get what they want. I want them to have the future they want, the results they want, and all these different areas of life. I'm an advocate. Like, I'm going to fight for, with you, for it. But my commitment is to do it in a fierce way. And I just, so there's no conversation too difficult to have. And there's nothing I'm unwilling to say. And I warn them about that. And I'm not right about it. I'm a pretty intuitive guy. I'm going to follow my intuition. And we're going to bring all that stuff to the surface just right now. You know, we're not going to wait. There's not a process. No. Whatever my hunch is, I'm going to listen way deeper than anyone's ever listened to them before. And that's frightening, you know, because I'm going to notice, I'm kind of paid to notice everything. And people have tells. And I think, you know, our mind wants to protect us. Our soul wants to grow, essentially. So I have that core belief. And let's just say that's right for a second, that there are, so when somebody's struggling, their mind is doing all the work on trying to justify it or make it somebody else's fault or make it their own history's fault or make it find reasons why it's so and it's not them, right? Or even if it is them, they'll be in some kind of shame, BS conversation about it, being really hard on themselves instead of being here and being alive. They'll just go beat themselves up, which is, you know, everybody can do that. I can do that. But it's just a self-protection strategy. Shame is nothing to be empathized with. It's nothing to be sympathized with. Let me say that. It's good. I've lived with shame about different areas of my life and blah, blah, blah. And that will never go away. It's here since the beginning of time. Anyway, my point is that people want the truth, even though it's frightening. And so I create a context with them where I tell them, hey, we're going to get to the truth real quick. And if you don't want to handle the truth, and I don't know what the truth is, but I'm going to explore it with you, then don't work with me because I'm going to be very, very frightening for you. But if you get the fact that I'm fighting for you, then we're going to get to the core issues as quickly as possible. Because the only reason to go slow is because maybe the intervener, maybe the therapist doesn't know what to do with it. Or they just want to protect themselves, and that's fine. That's just like whistling on the funeral dirge. Like, stop. Like, no. People know what they want. They're just scared to death to claim it, and they know what the issues are. They're just scared to death to own them. That's where I come from. So if they tell the truth and realize, first off, I'm not going to judge them. I always tell, there's no way you're going to offend me, and there's no way I'm going to judge you. No matter what you say, it's okay. Whatever you say works for me. That's a great starting point. Not, for the most part, not a great ending point, but a great starting point. So I can handle wherever you're at today. Wherever you're at works for me. Whatever you did, didn't do, works for me. So they feel that, and it's naturally kind of disarming for them. It's frightening, but then relieving. And so people they come to the call ready to rock and roll, and they want to work on something. So the top core value of our company is boldness, as you can tell. And that's, so if you don't like kind of the smelling salts experience, you won't like working with Take New Ground. But people that do, that are really leveraged and have a keen sense that, you know, what's their job in life? Their job in life is to explore their capacity. And I think that's probably, maybe at least for myself, what's my job? My job is to explore my own capacity. How brilliant could I get? How caring could I be? How ambitious and, you know, across the board, you know, what can I experience? And people that work with us tend to have that. And I tend to work with people that are gutsy, and that's why I work with founders versus just kind of boring corporate people.
Sure.
I like working with entrepreneurial. yeah, right. I like working with people that have this, like, you know, this aptitude to take a risk and go out and get something. And so they like it. They like the challenge. So I challenge people deeply, and they know that I love them beyond being right about it. I'm okay with being wrong about it, but I love them and I want the best for them. So that's a really long answer to your question, but I hope that satisfies.
No, that's an amazing answer. It's an amazing answer. And again, like, we appreciate your time so much, Adrian Kaler. Can you let our listeners know how they can get in touch with you and maybe talk about some of the things that you have in the hopper currently that our listeners would be interested in hearing more about?
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys, for letting me come and just get to know you guys. And then for all the listeners, hey, guys, if you're still here, thanks for listening. Yeah. So, you know, we work in-house with lots of companies, you know, and so I coach a lot of founders and coach senior leaders of the team, and we come in and we align a team and, you know, help people get fired, help people get hired. We do all that kind of stuff, but, we're disruptive by nature, for the sake of the future. So we'll do that kind of work. As far as opportunities coming up, a few times a year, we have a thing called the Revenant process, Revenant to come back from, to reinvent oneself. And we have a couple coming up, this spring. One's coming up at the end of February. One's coming up in April. End of February is in Boise. April is in LA. And it's a 4-day no holds barred leadership training. It's not a seminar where you'll sit and just take notes and do that kind of stuff. It's a very participatory. We're inviting you into the conversation. It's not like business BS, you know, here's the next, whatever. There's lots of that stuff out there. Go do that. This gets to the heart of the matter for you and who you are and who you think you are and who you want to be and all the things that come up when we start talking about that, which is always fear and all of our BS and all of our rackets we run and all that kind of stuff. So that's not for the faint of heart. But if you're committed to something or want to take a leap in some area of your life or your business or your relationships or whatever, it's a phenomenal gem to go work that out. And we've been doing it a long time. My business partner's been at this for 40 years. He's like Mozart. He's fantastic. His name's Dan Tichini. I'm just honored to get to work with him. And yeah, we'll have a full room. We'll have 40 people in the room in Boise, and we'll have the same in LA. So that's wearerevenant.com. Wearerevenant.com. For that, if you want to listen to what we have to say about all issues involving leadership, we've got a podcast called the Naked Leadership Podcast. Feel free to listen to some of those episodes. We put out an episode every Tuesday and every Friday. The Friday is a Cliff Notes version for all you really busy people out there. It's like a 5-minute version. And if you like it, you can go listen to a longer version. We love doing that. We've been doing that 4 or 5 years now, something like that. And it's mostly, we talk about topics that people are up against. We interview some people, but most of the time we're just talking about issues, either present day issues or kind of things we hear from our clients and things people are going through to hopefully illuminate the thinking behind the issues and how people can re-relate to what's going on so more possibilities show up. So that's the Naked Leadership Podcast. Couple free things.
Adrian, it was an absolute pleasure. Probably could talk for several more hours.
Hopefully, I would love to.
Yeah, we would. We should definitely grab some more time. I think that would be great for, you know, myself and the listeners. We will have all of that information that Adrian spoke about in our show notes. And we really want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for taking the time to chat with us.
Of course. Love you guys. Love you guys. Would love to stay connected.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Emotional Intelligence Podcast. We hope you found it informative and enjoyable. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on your favorite platform. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more people. If you're interested in learning more about the topics we discussed today, be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. You can find them by visiting our website. And if you have any questions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us by email at info@emotionalintelligence.com or connect with us on social media by using the links in the show notes.